You're listening to WCRS Community Radio, 98.3, 102.1 FM. This is Bob Fitrakis with another edition of Fight Back. Connie Goodell Newton is on assignment. I'm not sure where she was assigned, but she's on assignment. Perhaps she'll join us with the next show. What I would like to talk about is what's happening in Libya. And we've mentioned this before on Fight Back. Some of you listeners may recall that at the end of last year, in what ABC News called one of the stories of the year, after the fall of Gaddafi, Libyan missiles were found on the border of Gaza. The price had dropped, according to ABC News, from $10,000 to $4,000. And of the 20,000 handheld portable surface-to-air missiles capable of bringing down commercial airlines, out of the 20,000, 15,000 were missing. So that's what we call blowback, that term for unintended consequences that the CIA is so famous for uttering, blowback. Here's the problem, is that a lot of the consequences we're seeing, like 15,000 portable anti-aircraft missiles, shoulder-held surface-to-air missiles, preferred by terrorists, is that it was fairly predictable that these would go missing once we toppled Gaddafi's government. Colonel Gaddafi was a strong man. He was a brutal dictator, but the country of Libya was under control. So what we have to ask ourselves is, why would the United States lead the NATO coalition into Libya and overthrow Colonel Gaddafi, a sovereign head of state, if it would actually make things worse, create more terrorism, more disruption, more chaos? One of the things we should recall is that Gaddafi opened up his arsenals to his supporters in Tripoli and other places like Sirte. There were parts of the country that often we didn't see in our own media here, the mainstream for-profit media, that were in fact very much pro-Gaddafi. We tended to underscore there. Most of the anti-Gaddafi sentiment actually came from Benghazi, where the revolt occurred after the so-called Arab Spring. Now, one of the things we need to keep in mind when we analyze international relations is that a lot of these countries, including Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, but particularly Libya and Iraq, are artificial constructs. They're not logical nation states, and in fact contain people that historically have not gotten along, or in other periods of time were distinct provinces or territories with more distinct ethnic groups. For example, in the 19th century, latter part of the 19th century, known as the second period of direct Ottoman rule, Libya was actually three provinces. That is also true prior to World War I in Iraq, where the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunni were divided into three separate administrative provinces by the Ottoman Empire. Same was true in terms of Libya. So we need to keep that in mind as we analyze the situation. What happened in Libya, those of you who follow that history, is in 1912. Oh, there's a phone call. In 1912. Let me put that on hold. Well, in 1912, Italy conquered what is now Libya. The territory of Libya became, and the term itself, the concept of a modern Libya, really was known as Italian North Africa. And even the Italians split it into two colonies. Later, they would go as far as to have three provinces and a territory. So, modern Libya, as we know it, which comes after World War II, in fact, it's December 24th, 1951, when King Idris announces Libya as an independent nation. And King Idris himself had come from a long line of clerics, one of the Sufi sects in the Benghazi area. So, unlike Gaddafi, who comes to power in 1969, on September of 1969, when a small group of military officers led by the 27-year-old Muammar Gaddafi staged a coup to overthrow King Idris. And all of that comes out of a movement for pan-Arab nationalism. Gaddafi had a bad record, as we know, on human rights. But the question we have to ask ourselves is, will it be even worse with the shattering of Libya as a nation state? Libya itself, after independence, was divided into three different areas, each with its own governance. This was abolished in 1975. At one point in 1963, there actually were 10 different governors governing different regions of Libya. So one of the things we need to keep in mind is that Libya predictably would be shattered by the removal of Gaddafi, whose strong-arm tactics was holding the nation together. Another thing that often isn't repeated in the Western media is that Libya itself had the highest standard of living in Africa. I know listeners to this show are familiar with that fact, that Libya had the highest living standard in Africa, and in many ways was similar to the oil-rich Gulf countries. One other very interesting fact about Libya, which we need to keep in mind when we analyze it, is that Libya, unlike, say, the United States, which is $15 trillion in debt, is that Libya is or was debt-free under Gaddafi. And in fact, John Perkins, who wrote Confessions of an Economic Hitman, had made the point that Libya had 144 tons of gold in its central bank, often estimated to be the 10th largest producer of oil on the planet. So it had tremendous resources in terms of wealth and oil. Now, what has happened since then, if we look at the mainstream reporting in the New York Times, for example, Now we have a shattered country. NATO, in my opinion, illegally intervened. And as a result of that, in a sovereign nation, you've got the western part of Libya with over 100 militias that have united against the eastern part where the revolution began in Benghazi against Gaddafi. The other thing that's come out lately, and let me refer you to the New York Times, February 8th, 2012, is that militias are causing chaos throughout Libya, but particularly in Tripoli, where human rights groups now estimate that there's at least 250 militias controlling the city, or not controlling the city, actually having the city fall into chaos. Some of the reports is that while these militias are often related to a neighborhood, a tribe, an ethnic group, and in some cases came from other cities, is that one of the things that is clear from the reports is they're settling old ethnic scores and they're involved in plundering the wealth of Libya. So what you saw in Iraq with places being looted, palaces, government institutions, government agencies, the Museum of Antiquity, the same thing is now. This chaotic looting is happening as a result of U.S. and NATO intervention. So the broader question is, how can we restore government? You've got 100 militias in the West, which looks like it's going to create a civil war in Libya. You've got 250 armed militias in the capital or former capital of Tripoli. And you've got Benghazi forces as well as part of the traditional government. And here the best source is Human Rights Watch, which has been doing some very good reporting on this. Again, Doctors Without Borders almost withdrew from Libya because much of the people they're treating there are the result of torture. So we went in to remove the evil Gaddafi, but take the case of Omar Bribash, a former Libyan diplomat under Gaddafi to Paris, who was called in for questioning by militiamen from Zintan. The next day, his family found his body at a hospital. His nose was broken, so were his ribs. Nails had been put through his toes. His skull was fractured, and his body had been burnt from cigarettes. Essentially, he was tortured and beaten to death. Human Rights Watch has pointed out that if this was happening under Gaddafi or any Arab dictator, there would be a huge outcry. And let me quote from Human Rights Watch. Quote, if this was happening under any Arab dictatorship, there would be an outcry. But now it's being done as a result of the United States and NATO illegally invading a sovereign country. And this is the predictable blowback, not dissimilar to what we did in other nations. You're listening to WCRS Community Radio, 98.3 and 102.5. 1.1. As we were saying, a lot of the human rights groups have been concerned with the situation created with your tax dollars by the United States and NATO, with the removal of the sovereign head of state, Colonel Gaddafi, in Libya. There's a 45-page report that you should take a look at by Amnesty International, which accuses the militiamen of widespread human rights abuses against anyone they suspect of having been loyal to Gaddafi. Brutal torture and murder. Remember, we invaded when Gaddafi had estimated to have killed 1,000 people and threatened to go to Benghazi. Wasn't there, but had threatened to go to Benghazi and put down the rebellion. So now there's widespread torture. Far more people have died in the aftermath of our deposing Gaddafi. Far more torture has been unleashed, and no one is saying anything other than a few voices like this show. Fight back. In January and early February, Amnesty International delegates interviewed scores of victims of torture throughout Libya, Tripoli, Sirte, three other cities. And it also talked to several families whose relatives had died in custody of these militias after being tortured to death. This is what Amnesty International says, that and some of these people survived the torture so could speak firsthand. They were beaten for hours with whips, cables, plastic hose, metal chains and bars, wooden sticks, and they were given electric shocks with live wires, with tasers, with electroshock weapons. So there is widespread torture as a result of U.S. action, which destroyed the government of Libya. There is far more torture going on than there was under Gaddafi. So, what we have there again is blowback. Once again, the American people are whipped into a frenzy over a strong-armed pan-Arab dictator. Whipped into a frenzy. But after they overthrow him, the situation, in objective terms, gets much, much worse. Not only that, here's another consideration as part of the blowback. In Mali, in the northern desert of Mali, a rebel group which had long been dormant now is active in a civil war in Mali. The Colonel Gaddafi's arsenals, when troops loyal to him fled, they fled to Mali, where people there were sympathetic to his regime. Now they've received, because we overthrew him, they have many of his weapons. So now we have a full-blown revolution in Mali, a country that doesn't directly border Libya, but is in between Niger and Libya. So the weapons from Gaddafi's arsenal are now resurrecting a guerrilla group in Mali. Here's an analysis from one Western diplomat, as told to the New York Times. The stability of the entire region could be under threat. That's the foreign minister of Mali. Quote, the stability of the entire region could be under threat. So why is it that the United States wants to overthrow a pan-Arab dictator whose country is stable impossible violation of international law in attacking a sovereign, and then essentially allow chaos in Libya? Could it be because it then will justify the new occupation of Libya by European forces? So we know from these reports that torture is widespread. We know there's missing missiles. We know there's now rebellion in Mali. So as part of this overall history, we should think back to the United States. Are we, in fact, really solving problems, or are we, what we doing what was the thesis of a book by John Stockwell, the highest-ranking member of the CIA to ever go public? Stockwell, in his book In Search of Enemies, argues that the real goal of U.S. foreign policy is to create chaos in different parts of the world, which justifies our intervention, which justifies our massive military, where we have 4% of the world's population, but spend about half of all the military dollars on the planet, is that we may actually like this chaos. I also would refer you to a May 23rd, 2011 article I wrote at the time predicting some of this obvious blowback. It's called NATO Attacks Libya, the New Barbary Pirates. You can pick that up under columns at thefreepress.org. Again, the name is NATO Attacks Libya, the New Barbary Pirates, May 23rd, 2011. And some of the questions I pose in the article is, how does the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, go from being a collective defense organization created during the Cold War to essentially overthrowing a sovereign government? And does this represent simply neocolonialism or a new type of imperialism that we in the United States tend to be in denial about? During the 2011 Libyan uprising, the United Nations Security Council did pass a resolution, 1973, which calls for a ceasefire and authorized military action to protect civilian lives. And this is an oddity, of course. A coalition is formed centered around NATO with the help of the United Arab Emirates and Qatar, and passes a resolution. The resolution was to create a no-fly zone over Libya. So how did it go from a no-fly zone to actual troops on the ground from NATO, from France, from Britain, Qatar troops on the ground? So it's one thing to say we're not going to allow Gaddafi to use his air force or attack helicopters to repress rebels. It's another thing entirely to coordinate, and that's what NATO did, to coordinate the overthrow of the Gaddafi government. We moved in, we helped finance, helped organize the opposition in Benghazi. So there's a certain irony here that the U.S.-dominated NATO military organization, supposedly a defense alliance, would somehow be concerned with protecting Arab civilians. And again, the irony there is whether you agree with the first Gulf War or the attack and occupation of Iraq, but the United States has been the direct and indirect result of more dead Arab civilians than any nation on earth since 1990. About 1.5 million Arab civilians died as a direct result of our invasion bombings during the first Gulf War. Although we didn't occupy the country per the UN resolution, we did establish no-fly zones. We did bomb their water. We did bomb their sewage. We did, in fact, use embargoes against that country. We did stand by our military as the Kurds were attacked by Saddam Hussein. So many people died, including an estimated 500,000 children who lacked proper medicine and were subject to bad food, bad water as a result of the U.S. attack, lead attack, during the first Gulf War back in 1990-91. Again, John Hopkins University Medical School has, in fact, estimated that 750,000 Iraqi civilians died as a result of the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq in 2003. Many of them, granted, killed by other Iraqis. And again, that should be as no surprise, since some are Kurds, some are Shia, some are Sunni. And when you dismantle their army and dismantle their police and refuse to protect the civilian population and leave their arms depots unguarded, and the various ethnic groups then gather weapons and begin to kill each other again, that's a result of the U.S. occupation. And under international law, customary international law, as well as human rights law, we are obligated to defend that civilian population. So we can estimate that probably 2.25 million Iraqi civilians died as a result of U.S. military operations during the first Gulf War and during our recent and ongoing occupation in Iraq. So why suddenly would we depose Libya's leader, Mr. Gaddafi, when in fact he'd killed about 1,000 people who were in fact in open rebellion against him? And they were in an area that was sympathetic to Al-Qaeda. They were religious pan-Islamic forces. These are all questions that we need to consider. And again, I refer you to Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting in its January-February 2008 issue that pointed out that 1 million people had died in Iraq as a result of the most recent U.S. invasion. That number from, again, John Hopkins Medical School. So the for-profit media tends to ignore a lot of these factors. Lancet, the British medical journal, estimated that 100,000 civilians died in the first year alone. 100,000 in the first year alone. When we count in the United States, we only count the collateral damage. That is, we only count the civilians that our military kills. We don't count the people that died because we dismantled the government, the police, the army in Iraq. And now, once again, we're bringing chaos to a new level of the world. And far more than 1,000 people will die. And far more people will be tortured as we've unleashed tribal militias on Libya. We've unleashed torture. We've got 15,000 missing handheld surface-to-air missiles. We've unleashed rebellion in Mali. That is the blowback of Libya, and it's all too predictable. This is Bob Fitrakis saying, fight back.